the Lord spake unto David my father, saying, Thy son, whom I will set upon the throne in thy room, he shall build a house unto my name.
And you go on and read. Go ahead and read verse 6.
Now therefore, command now that they hew me cedar trees out of Lebanon. My servants shall be with thy servants, and unto thee will I give hire for thy servants according to all that thou shalt appoint. For thou knowest that there is not among us any that can scale the hewed timber like unto the Sidonians.
So the importance of this relationship between Hiram, king of Tyre, the kingdom of Phoenicia, is that that is where all the lumber came from to build the temple and David's house, Solomon's house, and other buildings there in Israel. Now, just I mentioned the masonry because back in the previous text it mentioned Hiram, and among the carpenters also masons. The mythology of Freemasonry teaches that Solomon and this Hiram that we're talking about, the king, resurrect the murdered Hiram Abiff, the widow's son, with the Masonic grip. Hiram Abiff, this is all fictitious, occult nonsense, but Hiram Abiff is supposed to have known the secret word, and he wouldn't give it up, so they killed him. So then King Solomon and Hiram of Tyre used a grip. They call it the Masonic grip, but it's actually also called the bear grip or bear claw. And I've shown a couple of you how to do that because I'm telling you, you can take someone like Olivia, preferably not while she's carrying a baby, but some other time, and she take Charlie fall down, and if Olivia uses this grip and gets her footing, she can lift Charlie up. And not that you're fat. I'm just saying you're 6'5". You're huge. But we've tested this out. It would take a little guy and the biggest guy around and have him lay. And basically, he didn't help. He just, all he did was put his hand up, make that grip. And the little guy yanked him right up. And there's been a lot of stories of people being in ditches and things and little people. Like Libby and I are little people. All right, 1 Kings 5, 6 to 9, to continue this relationship that we're reading about with Hiram and the king of Tyre with Solomon. Go ahead. Yeah, 6 through 9.
Now therefore command thou that they hew me cedar trees out of Lebanon, and my servants shall be with thy servants, and unto thee will I give hire for thy servants, according to all that thou shalt appoint. For thou knowest that there is not among us any that can skill to hew timber like unto the Sidonians. And it came to pass, when Hiram heard the words of Solomon, that he rejoiced greatly, and said, Blessed be the Lord this day, which hath given unto David a wise son over this great people. And Hiram sent to Solomon, saying, I have considered the things which thou sentest to me for, and I will do all thy desire concerning timber of cedar and concerning timber of fir.
And you, as I said, take time or just recall when you've read this before, this relationship, and it was a big undertaking. And verse 10 says, So Hiram gave Solomon cedar trees and fir trees according to all his desire. So this relationship, though, soured after the death of Hiram and, of course, the death of Solomon. And God responded to Tyre's abuses with wrathful vengeance that we read about here in verse 10 of Amos 1. But I will send a fire on the wall of Tyrus, which shall devour the palaces thereof. Now, the armies of Nebuchadnezzar, between the year 586 and 573 B.C., leveled what we call mainland Tyre. Some refer to it as Old Tyre. How many of you have those on your car? Which is It was never fully rebuilt. It was rebuilt to some extent. It was just like, you've seen some of these. Well, if you go to Death Valley, there's a town out there called Darwin, and it was once a thriving mining town, and they've kind of rebuilt it, but it's mostly RVs and shacks. You know, that's kind of what happened with Tyre. But on the map, the Mediterranean Sea and up the coast northeast of Israel, you'll see Tyre there, T-Y-R-E, for those who are listening. And that's where you'd find it in modern-day Lebanon, the nation country of Lebanon, to the north. You wonder, Lebanon's Hezbollah is the big terrorist group that's raining down missiles on Israel every few years from Lebanon. But Tyrus was moved after Nebuchadnezzar leveled it and rebuilt offshore and seemed impregnable by land until, that is, Alexander the Great puts the finishing touch on Tyre in 332 B.C. This is one of the most interesting things in history if you ever get, especially if you watch a good documentary on it. But see, over there to the right, that area of land is what we just showed you, where Tyre was on the mainland. But after Nebuchadnezzar destroyed it, they took this island off the shore and put these huge walls around it. And it had, you see there, if you can see that, it says mole constructed by Alexander, where there was a natural land bridge, but it was under water. But that's the only way it could be reached without naval ships. And Alexander didn't have at the time a lot of ships and everything. So this is about the equivalent of 7 football fields from the shore. That's a pretty good. And he needed to get an army over there too. It wasn't just one man trying to walk across something. So what's Alexander the Great do? He just, oh man. Went home. No, he started grabbing everything he could from what was left of the previous destruction. Then he tore down other things and just took rocks and everything he could and built a land bridge the length of about 7 or 8 football fields in water where there's waves and movement. You can imagine that, what this took. And then there's a lot more to it. He ended up getting some ships to come around and help him because Tyre would send out ships and stop the. They actually did this really cool thing. They got to about, we'll say, 5 football fields length close to the island, and they took a big, just a big ship, but it was just loaded with wood and stuff, and they took 2 other ships and they had it with ropes, and they kind of started going apart so that they could kind of fling it. They had it lit, and it ran into the fortifications of Alexander, caught the thing on fire. Then they start throwing it with catapults and these big, huge, what we would call flaming bombs or something, whatever you'd call them. And it was really neat if you see the reenactment or computer reenactment of it. But all that, in your history books, is a fulfillment of prophecy. A flaming wall. I mean, it literally was. I mean, and it is in every case he says that. And he also, when we talked about Hiram, and he provided all these cedars of Lebanon. If you go there now, you don't see the cedars. Scriptures make 5 exact and 4 other references to these wonderful cedars of Lebanon. And how many of you have seen, I mean, we've already established no one here's traveled to Israel, but how many of you have seen the videos of the land in Israel and the land in Lebanon? Looks like the moon. For the exception of the areas where the Jews in Israel have been irrigating and kind of bringing it back to life. But most of it, it just looks like rock with dirt on it. Used to be like the Garden of Eden. You read the accounts before Nebuchadnezzar and even up to the time of Titus, the Roman general. It was a beautiful green area. And Mark Twain, when he went there before the Jews took control of it back in the 19th century, and he said that it was just desolate. You go miles without seeing a human being. And I think he was the one who said he imagined that's what the moon would look like if we went there. But that was before he went there.
If we went there.
But but this is a place in Lebanon today called the Cedars of God. It's a small little area, and it's all that's left of the Lebanons, of the cedars in Lebanon. And what happened? Just basically burned out. And just like God said, I will send a fire. So it's another prophecy fulfilled. And I just gave you a little taste. I hope you go find some good resources for all that. So now Amos turns his fire on Edom. And that's what we'd call part of modern Negev and down near where Petra's at, south and southeast of Israel. Let's read those verses 11 and 12. Read that with me. Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Edom and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because he did pursue his brother with the sword and did cast off all pity, and his anger did tear perpetually, and he kept his wrath forever. But I will send a fire upon Teman, which shall devour the palaces of Bozrah. So it says there he did pursue his brother. And we mentioned this a moment ago, but we may forget this fact. As you read on past Genesis, Edom is pretty much always an enemy of Israel. But we forget the reality. Go back to Genesis 25. Who's going to read that for me? Johnny has it. Genesis 25, verses 21 through 26.
And Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife, because she was barren. And the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. And the children struggled together within her, and she said, if it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said unto her, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. And when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red all over like a hairy garment, and they called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 80 years old when she bare them.
So, isn't it sad? I mean, we have Charlie and Matt. To think of their descendants becoming enemies and killing each other and everything, it'd be horrible. And twins, even. And we know the story of, Jacob gypped Esau and took his birthright for a mess of pottage, and then later he tricked Isaac into giving him Esau's blessing. And then later, read that carefully in Genesis, they come run back into each other after Jacob has his two wives and two concubines and has all his kids. He's heading back home, and he comes across Esau, and he thinks Esau's going to kill him. And he finds out Esau's over it. But then Esau says, yeah, okay, well, we'll just travel with you. And Jacob says, no, don't do that. Go on down. We'll meet you down there. And if you read the text, he doesn't. He goes on to his own place. Kind of leaves. It's kind of like being stood up on a date, Okay, kind of stood him up. But Teman was the most populous city, and Bozrah was the capital there in Edom. And if you go there today, you'll find that the cities of Edom were destroyed. And there's plenty of evidence of being destroyed by fire, just like Amos says. And little remains in the entire region of Edom but the vacant city of Petra, the rock city, that we believe, we've talked about that before, when Revelation 12, verse 6 says that the woman Israel fled to the wilderness And in several places in the Psalms, it talks about them hiding in a place prepared for them, in the rock, etc. And we believe that's a reference to Petra, which would have been part of Edom. So it's another prophecy fulfilled.
That's not a rock thing.
No, it is, but it's no association with our study, but there, Petra was a Christian rock band. And now, the last place we're going to look is Amos turns his fire on Ammon. And how many of you know or familiar with that city in Jordan, Ammon? So let's read these verses 13 through 15. Read the odd with me. Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of the children of Ammon, and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they have ripped up the women with child of Gilead, that they might enlarge their border. But I will kindle a fire in the wall of Rabbah, and it shall devour the palaces thereof, with shouting in the day of battle, with a tempest in the day of the whirlwind. And their king shall go into captivity, he and his princes together, saith the Lord. So Ammon was the incestual offspring of Lot. So he's a cousin to the Jews. Look at who's got Genesis 19. Is that Janie? Genesis 19, verses 35 through 38.
And they made their father drink wine that night also. And the younger arose and lay with him, and he perceived not when she lay down, nor when she arose. Thus were both the daughters of Lot with child by their father. And the firstborn bare a son, and called his name Moab. The same is the father of the Moabites unto this day. And the younger, she also bare a son, and she called his name Benami.
Benami.
I'll get it straight sooner or later.
And the same is the father of the children of Ammon unto this day.
Yeah, Ammon, yeah. So those names aren't easy to pronounce, but what you see Amos saying is that the distant relatives of the Jews, it's an ugly comment, but it's there, have ripped up the women with child of Gilead. Why did they do such a terrible thing? You see there? How's that verse end? Verse 13. For land. For just to enlarge their border. They attacked the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, east of Jordan in Gilead, to take Israel's land. And ugly. Their attack was vicious and violent. And God responded with wrathful vengeance. Verses 14 15, he says, but I will kindle a fire in the wall of Rabbah, and it shall devour the palaces thereof with shouting in the day of battle, with a tempest in the day of the whirlwind. That's like the battle was so involved and crazy. It was like being in the middle of a tornado. In verse 15, and their king shall go into captivity, he and his princes together. And that is what happened. Surprise! You don't ever want God to say he's going to do something like that to you, because he's going to do it. It's like with Nineveh. You know, Jonah went down there and preached, and they repented, but then when they went back to their ways, they got what God said was coming. So that's another prophecy fulfilled. And these nations were constantly trying to destroy the Jews. Why is that? What motivates? Jenny and I were talking on the way over here. All these people like that Beto O'Rourke, or whatever his name is, communist down there in Texas, who interrupted Governor Abbott's press conference about these kids being shot. What, you know, what motivates these guys to be so radical and crazy whenever, according to their own profession, they're godless? They just think this whole thing is temporary. We're all going to melt The sun's going to implode, supernova, and everything's going to be gone, and there's no God, no heaven, no hell. So what motivates these people to spend, instead of Beto, whatever, whoever you want to talk about, they ought to be out surfing or something. Why are they spending all their time trying to destroy all that's good and decent? They're motivated by the devil. And their motivation, they may not realize it, they might say this out of their own mouth, but their motivation is they're being used of the devil to try to thwart the plan of God. And that's exactly what these nations, who were constantly trying to destroy the Jews, wanted to thwart the plan of God. And if they could have destroyed the Jews, guess what? They would have. Because then Jesus couldn't have come into the world through a little Jew named Mary, who was a virgin. And he couldn't have, if he wasn't Jewish and of the right lineage, he couldn't claim to be the son of David and entitled to the throne. Let's read there. Who's the last one we got there? Jim. Yeah, I forgot. He's going to read the Psalm 83, 1 through 12.
Keep not thou silence, O God. Hold not thy peace, and be not still, O God. For alone thine enemies make a tumult, and they that hate thee have lifted up the head. They have taken crafty counsel against thy people and consulted against thy hidden ones. They have said, come, and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel be no more in remembrance. For they have consulted together with one consent. They are confederate against thee.
Now, watch these, the names of these nations he lists here, beginning verse 6. Go ahead, Jim.
The tabernacle of Edom and the Ishmaelites, of Moab and the Hagarines, Gebal and Ammon and Amalek, the Philistines with the inhabitants of Tyre, Ashur also was joined with them. They have hope in the children of Lot, Selah. Do unto them as unto the Midianites, as to Sisera, as to Dabin, at the brook of Kishon, which perished at Endor. They became as dung for the earth. Make their nobles like Oreb and like Zeeb, yea, all their princes as Zeba and as Zalmana, who said, let us take to ourselves the houses of God in possession.
That's to this day, it's still going on. Yep. To this day, that's what's still driving and motivating these nations that surround Israel. If you notice, as Amos has been pronouncing these judgments, it's just a big circle around Israel. And we're not done. There's one more next week at the beginning of chapter 2. And it's the Moabites. But you have Gaza in the red, King of Edom at the bottom. You have Ammon, Kingdom of Aram and Damascus of Syria and the Phoenicians. And it's all, the only thing that's changed since then are the names of the particular people there. That it's still the same spirit driving the desire for the destruction of Israel all around that nation. So chapter 2 begins with Moab completing that circle and then moving on to Israel and Judah. And so we'll get there next week. God will have His day of vengeance on the wicked. Amen? So, and He will have His reward for those who believe on His word. As Joshua said, we say to the world, choose this day whom you will serve. You're either going to get His wrath or get reward you don't deserve. Amen. Next week, let's begin Amos chapter 2, verse 1. All right, let's sing a closing song.